kid just saying it's something to get some pussy.
www.laura.ch.
Radio Laura is built on your donations and your support.
www.laura.ch.
Radio Laura is independent from commercial advertising.
www.laura.ch.
Your support brings news, music, culture, and in-betweens from all over the world. For more details, please visit www.laura.ch.
Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, Galveston 89.5 FM, and Huntsville 91.9 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different cities in the US and Europe. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1130, we will continue to talk about the ongoing genocide and ethnic cleansing in occupied Palestine by apartheid Israel, including the murder of an American citizen by the Israeli occupation forces in the occupied West Bank. I will air the latest electronic intifada newscast, a recap of Palestinian news over the past few days, Medea Benjamin's remarks on the murder of American citizen Aisha Noor Izgi, and the speech of Yoli Novak, executive director of B'Tselem, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories, delivered at the United Nations Security Council. I will also air some of the remarks delivered at the National March for Palestine held recently in the United Kingdom. Let's begin with the latest electronic intifada newscast, a recap of Palestinian news from over the past few days, summarized by Noura Barouz Friedman.
This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Noura Barouz Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 341 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here is a summary of some of the latest developments in Gaza and the West Bank, and we'll share some reportage highlights from the Electronic Intifada's contributors there. Early Tuesday morning, while families were sleeping, Israel bombed the massive encampment in the sand dunes of Al-Mawasi in Khan Yunus, designated by Israel as a so-called safe zone or humanitarian area, with a series of airstrikes, killing at least 40 and injuring dozens more. Rescuers, including Palestinian Civil Defense, searched for survivors of the attack, digging through the sand with their bare hands. Witnesses told Al Jazeera that fires were burning and Israeli surveillance drones circled overhead while people searched for any sign of their loved ones. The heavy Israeli bombs, made in the United States and enthusiastically delivered by the Biden-Harris administration, obliterated at least 22 out of the 40 people killed so completely that their bodies were not even recoverable. Tents melted into the sand, leaving craters in the dunes up to 30 feet deep. A spokesperson for the Gaza Civil Defense Corps said that initial assessments suggest that the attack was, quote, one of the worst heinous massacres in this frenzied war. The spokesperson added that it was extremely difficult retrieving the bodies of people killed in the massacre. Israel claimed that Hamas had set up a command center in the encampment for displaced people. In a statement on Tuesday, Hamas flatly rejected Israel's claims. The political party stated, quote, this is a clear lie that aims to justify these ugly crimes. The resistance has denied several times that any of its members exist within civilian gatherings or using these places for military purposes. Videos showed displaced Palestinians who survived the massacre on Tuesday reconstructing tents out of wood, plastic, and cloth later in the day. Our senior editor, Maureen Claire Murphy, reports that Israel has instructed civilians to move to Al-Mawasi, an open coastal area lacking infrastructure to meet the needs of displaced people, when issuing evacuation orders in other areas of Gaza. Israel most recently ordered Palestinians to evacuate to Al-Mawasi on August 24th, according to the UN. Israel has repeatedly struck facilities being used as shelters for displaced people in Gaza. often claiming without evidence that they were being used as command centers by Hamas and other resistance groups, despite the vast tunnel networks used by resistance fighters, Maureen writes. Over the weekend, the Israeli military attacked the Halima al-Sadiya school, sheltering hundreds of displaced Palestinians in Jabalia al-Nazla in northern Gaza. The attack, which occurred without warning on Saturday, killed four people and injured several others. That same day, four Palestinians, including a child, were killed when Israeli warplanes bombed the Amr ibn al-As school north of Gaza City, which was also being used as a shelter. The human rights group Euromed Monitor stated that, quote, since the beginning of August, the Israeli occupation army has bombed 16 schools being used as shelters in the Gaza Strip, noting that all but one of the targeted schools are in the northern half of Gaza. Maureen writes that, quote, the deliberate destruction of civilian infrastructure in Gaza's north, including facilities serving as shelters, is part of Israel's strategy to create a coercive environment in order to forcibly transfer the population to central and southern Gaza, according to Euromed. The rights group pointed to reports in Israeli media about a plan to depopulate northern Gaza drafted by Israeli reservist commanders and soldiers. The scheme, reportedly presented to Israel's cabinet and other senior officials, was spearheaded by Giora Eiland, the retired major general and close advisor to Israel's defense minister, who called for creating conditions for the spread of epidemics in Gaza as a form of biological warfare. It calls for an estimated 300,000 civilians to evacuate northern Gaza in a one-week period, after which the area would be besieged and Hamas fighters would be made to surrender or be killed. For much more on the attacks on al-Mawasi and the critical situation in the north of Gaza, read Maureen Claire Murphy's latest report, Israel Kills 40 in Gaza Humanitarian Zone, on electronicintifada.net. Airstrikes and ground attacks continued against Palestinians across the northern and central strip this week, including in Deir al-Balah and in Gaza City. Attacks on Monday alone across Gaza killed more than 30 Palestinians. On Monday, Israel bombed an apartment building in western Gaza City and attacked the Jabalia refugee camp, killing six Palestinians, including two children. Hossam Shabbat, a journalist working in northern Gaza, said on Monday that, quote, today at the massacre scene in northern Gaza, a young girl no more than a year old was killed. Her head was wide open and brain matter was exposed. Paramedics had to stuff her head with cloth so that her body can hold up to be buried. On Tuesday, hours after the massacre in al-Mawasi Khan Yunus, Israeli airstrikes targeted a shelter in Burej refugee camp near Deir al-Balah in the central Gaza Strip. Our contributor Abu Bakr Abed has been reporting constant tank shelling, airstrikes, and fire from helicopter gunships in and around Deir al-Balah over the past few days. Earlier in the week, the UN and its local partners in Gaza ended the second phase of the polio vaccination campaign, reaching more than 256,000 children in the southern cities of Rafah and Khan Yunus. The Israeli military ordered Palestinians in the northern city of Beit Lahia to be forcibly displaced amidst the beginning of the third phase of the polio vaccination campaign in the north. In preparation for the mass vaccination campaign, international humanitarian organizations, including the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, were denied permits by Israel to cross checkpoints into the north, according to Al Jazeera. The Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated that Israel is critically undermining Gaza's polio vaccination campaign in the north. On Tuesday, Israel bombed a food stall in the Tufah neighborhood located between three deconflicted centers designated as safe for providing polio vaccinations to children in northern Gaza, the rights group said. They stated that, quote, from the beginning of the polio vaccination campaign on September 1st, the Israeli army has ignored all calls for a humanitarian truce or a temporary cessation of attacks during vaccination hours. Instead, it has continued its military attacks on all areas of the Gaza Strip, from the north to the south, launching dozens of air raids targeting sites near vaccination centers in the southern, central, and now northern sections of the Strip. Mohamed Hadi, the United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator for Palestine, released a statement on Tuesday saying that 12 UN staff members, quote, whose movement was fully coordinated with the Israeli army and whose details were shared with them in advance, were stopped on its way to North Gaza on Monday to support the third phase of the Gaza Strip-wide polio vaccination campaign. While at the checkpoint, the team was informed that the Israeli army wanted to hold two of the UN staff members in the convoy for further questioning, Hadi said. The situation escalated quickly with soldiers pointing their weapons directly toward the convoy personnel. Israeli troops encircled the convoy and fired shots before Israeli military tanks and a bulldozer, quote, proceeded to ram the UN vehicles from the front and from the back, compacting the convoy with the UN staff inside, according to Stefan Dujarric, spokesperson for the UN Secretary General. He added that the bulldozer dropped debris on the first vehicle, while Israeli soldiers threatened staff, making it impossible for them to safely exit the vehicles. The convoy remained held at gunpoint while senior-level UN officials attempted to de-escalate the situation with the Israelis. The two staff were eventually questioned one by one and then released. After 7.5 hours at the checkpoint, the convoy returned to base without being able to fulfill its humanitarian mission to support the polio campaign. Despite the assault on the UN convoy and the enormous obstacles for humanitarian aid missions in the north, the Palestinian Ministry of Health and the UN teams were able to vaccinate 77,000 children against polio on Tuesday. This week, we published a personal narrative from Gaza-based writer Saida Hamdona, who describes how being forcibly displaced multiple times is affecting her young children and her family's overall health. Saida writes, quote, Zakaria, who is only 8, has started having difficulty speaking. It seems he grasped the realities of the tragedy we were living. He asked questions even philosophers couldn't answer. Why are we here? What did we do wrong? When the war ends, where will we live? Calamities rarely travel alone. Recently, hepatitis A has spread among the tents. Hepatitis A is most commonly transmitted through human waste. Like everyone else in the camp, we used the mosque bathroom. Some of my relatives contracted the disease as a result and suffered from its symptoms, which included a loss of appetite and an inability to taste food for 2 weeks. Without irony, doctors recommended avoiding canned foods, eating more vegetables, and consuming honey. As if they didn't know we can only have canned food, can only imagine the luxury of fresh vegetables, and are barely able to remember what honey looks like, let alone how it tastes. And we are relatively blessed, us, the displaced people. At least we have some bread and food in the south. Our relatives in the northern sector don't even have canned food or a loaf of bread. Despite the harsh conditions we have endured and continue to endure, we hold on to hope and faith that tomorrow will be better. We may have lost our homes and security, but we have not lost our humanity and dignity. That's from Saida Hamdona's feature, Dream of Returning Home Keeps Family Moving Forward, on electronicintifada.net. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli soldiers withdrew from Jenin refugee camp in the north after a 10-day raid in which essential infrastructure was destroyed, at least 21 Palestinians were killed, and more than 130 injured. Since the end of August, Israeli forces have besieged other refugee camps across the northern West Bank. Our senior editor Maureen Claire Murphy writes that this past week, Israeli occupation forces killed both an American woman during a protest in Beita, a village near Nablus, and a 13-year-old Palestinian girl in a separate but nearby incident on Friday. In the latter incident, Bana Amjad Bakr was struck by a bullet in her chest while in her home during confrontations that erupted in Karyut village, also near Nablus, after settlers raided and attacked the community. The girl's father said that she was shot by Israeli occupation forces while in her room with her sisters, the official Palestinian news agency Wafa reported. Defense for Children International Palestine stated that on the previous day, quote, Israeli forces shot and killed a 16-year-old Palestinian boy in the northern occupied West Bank and then desecrated his body. The teen, Majid Abu Zeina, quote, was shot in the leg by an Israeli soldier from a distance of 30 meters in Al-Fara refugee camp south of Tubas. Israeli soldiers approached Majid as he lay injured on the ground and prevented a Palestinian ambulance from reaching him, according to Defense for Children International Palestine. Majid pleaded with Israeli soldiers to let the ambulance help him, but they ignored him. And one of them ordered him to lift up his shirt, quote, which revealed a homemade explosive device that Majid was allegedly carrying. The soldier, quote, then shot Majid at point blank range in the neck, killing him, according to the children's rights group. Maureen writes that video shows an Israeli military bulldozer moving the boy's body with its front blade. The soldiers operating the bulldozer drove around Al-Fara with the teen's body in the blade for an hour before dumping him in another area of the camp. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights said that the boy's abdomen was torn open while being carried by the bulldozer and his internal organs were exposed. His body was, quote, disfigured and unrecognizable when it was finally retrieved following the withdrawal of Israeli troops hours later. The U.S. citizen killed in Beita on Friday was identified as 26-year-old Aishanur Egi, a resident of Seattle, Washington. The International Solidarity Movement stated that Egi was an activist with the group and is the 18th person to be killed in the context of Beita's protests since 2020, following the establishment of Aviatar, a settlement outpost on village land. Israeli troops fired tear gas and live ammunition during confrontations that ensued following afternoon prayers held during the protest, forcing demonstrators to retreat toward the village. Demonstrators were congregated on the outskirts of the village, some 150 to 200 meters away from Israeli troops, according to Jonathan Pollack, an Israeli anti-occupation activist who was present when Egi was shot in the head. The situation was quiet when a sniper positioned on a rooftop fired two live bullets, he said. Quote, I found her lying on the ground, bleeding from her head, Pollack said, adding that she had a very weak pulse. Egi was evacuated to a hospital, but efforts to save her life failed. Saad Dehab, a resident of Beita, told Wafa News Agency that after the shots rang out, quote, I saw the soldiers dancing happily at what they had done. That's all from Maureen. Claire Murphy's report. Witness: Israeli troops in West Bank intentionally killed U.S. activist, on electronicintifada.net. Palestinians in Beita held a massive funeral for Aishanur Egi on Monday. The U.S. State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel said that Washington will not be conducting its own investigation into Aishanur Egi's execution in the occupied West Bank. Instead, he said that U.S. officials expect Israel to investigate itself. And U.S. President Joe Biden provided cover for Israel, suggesting last night that the bullet that hit Aishanur in the head had ricocheted off the ground, calling it, quote, an accident. Meanwhile, after Israeli troops withdrew from Jenin, leaving massive destruction of roads and infrastructure, local residents helped clean up the streets and repair the damage. And funerals were held for resistance fighters who were killed during confrontations with Israeli soldiers in the 10-day invasion. In Tulkarem, the Israeli army partially withdrew last week but reinvaded the city on Monday. The Palestine Red Crescent Society stated on Tuesday that Israeli forces assaulted members of their medical team in Tulkarem. Israeli soldiers, the physicians say, targeted one of their volunteer paramedics with live bullets while he was providing first aid to an injured person in Tulkarem camp. Israeli forces also arrested two EMTs from inside the Tulkarem Emergency Medical Services Center after storming and surrounding it, the Red Crescent added. The medics were eventually released. And finally, we wanted to bring you some images and videos from journalists and others in Gaza that highlight the resilience, joy, and determination of the Palestinian people. Kids in a makeshift tent classroom in the north, organized by the educational initiative Gaza Great Minds, showed off their English language skills.
I do
And our dear contributor, Abu Bakr Abed, posted a photo of a magnificent work of art that his father, Wissam, made especially for the Electronic Intifada. It says, "From Deir Balah, Gaza, to the Electronic Intifada, with love and hope." And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
Great news summary by the Electronic Intifada. Medea Benjamin, author, peace activist, and co-founder of the peace group Code Pink, delivered these remarks on the murder of American citizen Aisha Noor Izgi in the occupied West Bank by the Israeli occupation forces on September 6, 2024.
I am heartbroken and furious today to learn about the Israeli murder of U.S. citizen Aisha Noor Izgi, who was in the West Bank participating in a peaceful protest where they were supporting Palestinian farmers trying to hold on to their land from the violent Israeli settlers. My heart goes out to her family, to her friends. And let's remember, she is not the only U.S. citizen murdered by the Israeli military. There was Rachel Corrie in 2003, a 23-year-old woman, also from Washington State, who was crushed by an Israeli bulldozer as she tried to protect the home of a Palestinian family in Rafah. There was Furkan Dogan, who is in international waters with the Gaza Freedom Flotilla trying to bring humanitarian aid to Gaza when it was boarded, and he, along with nine others, were murdered by the military. There was Shireen Abu Akleh, the journalist who was clearly marked in a vest that said press when she was shot in the head by Israeli snipers. You know, President Biden said, if you kill an American, we will respond. How has he responded? By sending more and more weapons to Israel. As we work to dismantle the entire settler colonial regime in Israel, there are some immediate actions we have to take. One is to demand an independent investigation into the murder of Aisha Noor Izgi. We must demand that the settlers be sanctioned, not just the individual ones, but the government people who are supporting them. We must demand that the nonprofit status of the groups in the United States that send money to those illegal settlements be taken away. And we must demand that President Biden stop sending weapons to Israel. We say today, Aisha Noor Izgi presente, free, free Palestine.
At the Venice International Film Festival held on September 7, 2024 in Italy, Jewish-American filmmaker Sarah Friedland won awards for Best Director, Best First Film, and Best Actress for her film Familiar Touch. And this is what she said during her acceptance speech.
As a Jewish-American artist working in a time-based medium, I must note I'm accepting this award on the 336th day of Israel's genocide in Gaza and 76th year of occupation. I believe it is our responsibility as film workers to use the institutional platforms through which we work to redress Israel's impunity on the global stage. I stand in solidarity with the people of Palestine in their struggle for liberation.
On September 4th, 2024, Yoli Novak, executive director of Beit Salem, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the occupied Palestinian territories, delivered a speech at the United Nations Security Council on the situation in occupied Palestine and the events unfolding there. Let's listen in.
Members of the Security Council, it is an honor to address the Security Council today, and I thank the Slovenian presidency for the invitation to talk to you about the state of human rights in Israel-Palestine. On Sunday, we woke up to the news that six Israeli hostages were executed by Hamas as Israeli forces came close. Another six, added to the tens of thousands of people in this land who should not have died over the past year. During this week, hundreds of thousands of Israelis have taken to the streets. They feel angry, desperate, and betrayed by their government. They have understood that the Israeli government does not want to retain the hostages in a deal, but to continue the war indefinitely. To understand the Israeli government's criminal conduct over the last 11 months, you have to understand the overall goal of this regime. Since Israel was founded, its guiding logic has been to promote Jewish supremacy over the entire territory under its control. The current government's guidelines state that, quote, the Jewish people have an exclusive and unquestionable right to all parts of the land of Israel. In the criminal Hamas-led attack on October 7th, 1,200 Israelis were killed and 250 taken hostages. Since that day, I and every Israeli I know have been living in deep fear. Our government is cynically exploiting our collective trauma to violently advance its project of cementing Israel control over the entire land. To do that, it is waging war on the entire Palestinian people, committing war crimes almost daily. In Gaza, this has taken the form of expulsion, starvation, killing, and destruction on an unprecedented scale. This goes beyond revenge. Israel is using the opportunity to promote an ideological agenda, making Gaza inhabitable. As this council has been informed repeatedly, a vast part of Gaza's homes and infrastructures have been completely destroyed. By driving Palestinians out of entire areas and displacing millions, Israel is laying the groundwork for long-term control of Gaza that could lead to re-establishing Israeli settlements there. In the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, the government is exploiting the circumstances to create irreversible changes. Since October, Israeli forces have killed 640 Palestinians there, including at least 140 minors. Settlers are attacking Palestinians and carrying out pogroms in broad daylight with support of from the government. They have so far managed to drive 19 Palestinian community out of their homes. And recently, the military launched a huge operation to damage infrastructures that serves hundreds of thousands of people in the northern West Bank. The international community did not stop Israel's criminal policy of massive harm to civilians in Gaza. Now, this cruel policy is spilling over into the West Bank. The war on Palestinians is also happening inside prisons. Since October, Israel has arrested thousands of Palestinians and held them in inhumane conditions. Last month, we at B'Tselem published a report called Welcome to Hell. It shows a shocking pattern of abuse that amounts to torture. The government of Israel has used the war to turn Israeli prisons into a network of torture camps for Palestinians. This violence is possible because Israel has enjoyed impunity for decades. As long as this impunity continues, the killing and destruction will continue and expand, and fear will continue to rule the land. The international community has failed its duty to protect civilians. 4 UN Security Council resolutions on the Gaza conflict did not lead to a lasting ceasefire or free the hostages. The risk of regional escalation has grown. Diplomatic efforts did not stop the mass killing of civilians and the humanitarian disaster in Gaza. The Council must acknowledge this failure and take effective action to compel Israel and Hamas to immediately and permanently cease all hostilities. But de-escalation is only the first step. It is time for the Council to address the opinion of the International Court of Justice on the illegality of Israel's entire occupation and settlement project. Every day that this Council does not act on the court's call to end the occupation and apartheid is another day you are abandoning us, the people of this land, who are suffering